you don't mind.
Hey, guys, can we have your attention, please? We're getting started.
So I wanted to have your attention up here to this board over there. I wanted to point out that Asenial has commented on some of the blogs. Kyle, I generally find your writing to be consistently well thought out and gracefully executed. Of all the blogs posted, yours is the only entry that even mentions QE1. A shame, since there are plenty of portraits of Gloriana. Spencer was working the Queen hard for a handout, so I think the historical perspective is important. Not too sure about what Ralph Nader, but you make a good point. So this Asenial is a lawyer in North Carolina that's been reading our blogs all semester long. I really appreciated your take on the paladin who wouldn't have time to vote or the ability to choose without all the facts. Wonderful point. Who's that to?
That's me.
Who's this to? That's from Britomart 2008, Best Dialogue in Class.
That's me, yeah.
You think?
Yeah, I wrote my the spaces between all the letters.
It looks like it's two comments on the same blog. Yeah.
So, a lot of high compliment. Is that Britomart and iambic perspective should have used the Spencerian stanza?
I just didn't think I could pull off four in the same rhyme in one stanza.
We loved it anyway, so that was a great, that was when I saw that, that was great.
I just thought that was hilarious. Dan, lovely job. Can't speak to comma splices. I think Jay would be all over me as well. And you notice this is nicely done. She comma spliced.
Yeah. Yes.
But you know she did it on purpose. You know she did it on purpose. Engaging and creative. I didn't feel like I was reading a response to a classroom question, yet all the questions were answered. Keep an eye out for using the same word twice in one sentence or paragraph unless it's stylistic.
It was.
And so I, too, had said, nice poem. You weren't attempted to write in Spencerian stanzas? Okay. So I just want you all to know that you were being read, and she finally sent me this email. She tracked down who I was by clicking on our Vicarious Universe blog and then following it to my university email address and ask permission to comment on your blogs. I said, anybody can comment on these blogs. And so she's had all this pent-up interest in your material.
Is that intertextuality?
This, I don't know that it's intertextuality.
It's kind of a stretch, isn't it?
So, okay, that's what I had to say. Papers, I presume, are all in. Anybody had any difficulty on that?
On what?
I'm getting your paper in yesterday.
Excellent. Almost late.
What?
Some media almost 5 minutes late.
Five minutes later?
Yeah, I have a problem with my computer.
I think I can offer a five-minute grace period. Six would have been really stretching. But thanks for letting me know. Okay, then turn it over to Professor Hall, anything you'd like me to be getting up on this board?
Just switch over to the second tab. We'll leave that ambient in the background.
Aha, yes, okay.
And who will volunteer to drive the smart board today that didn't last week?
Yeah, I will.
I'm looking at Lynn unless someone else jumps in.
I'll do it.
Okay, Derek's going to. You don't need to jump up right now. Just you're the chosen volunteer at an appropriate moment.
Did he do it yesterday?
So.
No.
I think Dan did.
No, that was
Lee. Lee, I know Dan did it once, Lee did it once, and we'll give Derek a chance to have his moment in the sunshine.
Who was the one that gave really nice graphics to it?
Dan. Hey, Dan.
So you have a lot to live up to, Derek.
You guys, I see you formed up with your teammate. This is good. Sorry, Game Design Workshop. Let me tell you a little bit about what we're going to achieve today. The Mithridale Manual was out on the internet. I didn't have the link off the blog or on Oak, so my apologies there. I'm just going to walk you through the salient points. The goal is to show you some of the complexities involved in fleshing out the mechanics of a game. I know Justin got an opportunity to look at it. It was available through a quick Google search. But we'll just walk through that. Then we're going to get into a little bit about the spatial orientation up here on the smart board where Derek's going to be working. I'm going to show you how we conceptualized the Fairy Queen's space last semester, and then Professor Clayton is going to walk you through some of the assumptions and walk you through some of the history as to how we came to this. And then with what we've learned about the Fairy Queen, we're going to have a class discussion about how we think we should modify it and where we should spatially position some of our new areas like Castle Boucherain, the field around Castle Boucherain, and the flashback to Merlin's Cave. And those four areas aren't going to be exclusive or restrictive. We may add a couple more. If you can't get it, just jump. Okay. All right. So let me take you over to this document. Let's give you a little history. I'm going to draw your attention up to this side of the class. We'll figure it out. Thanks, Eric, for your help. Back in 2005, the previous version of Neverwinter Nights was just called Neverwinter Nights. Right? That's why we're a 2 and that was a 1. And I undertook a project along with some friends that we were just going to develop our own persistent world. We had played a lot of games out in the commercial space, and we wanted to try to develop something ourselves. So the question, and think about all the things we've read about game design. You've got an assignment for Thursday, games as narrative play, which I think is going to be important and relevant to what we're doing here. We decided to talk about what we'd like to do, and we came up with some storylines. It could be any fantasy storyline. The story here in and of itself isn't really the issue. What I want to take you through is this is a concept of a design document. And I want you to think about the complexities involved in really fleshing out. You've played Lord of the Rings, Final Fantasy, you've played around a little bit with Neverwinter Nights. When you start using the tool set and actually getting into it, you're going to experience some of the complexities and get a feeling for what it takes to actually do some of the things that you would like to do in Neverwinter Nights, but maybe difficult to do in reality. I'm going to show you a couple resources that you can use. Show you one conversation, just the conversation tree, and make sure that everybody knows where the help file is. And then we're going to make sure that you know that Matt Shelton now is his time to shine. He'll be available as you stumble through your learning processes to assist you with the tool set and how to actually do some of the things in the tool set. So let me tell you about Mithrandale. This is a design document. And this is just any world that we created. It's pure randomness. And I want to start off by walking you through the table of contents. And this is how I approach the game design. This is not the way to do it. There's 1,000 ways to do it. I think when you look at the model in the industry today, you guys ever went to like one of the websites that describe how the game was created, any of the games today? Mm-hmm. Any of you went through some of those how the games? I mean, any of you ever watched the documentaries on how Star Wars was created or any of those? It could be any of these. Pick one. I mean, what in those sort of documentaries, what would the typical things they talk about when you go through those documentaries? How that product came to market in a movie. You've seen movie documentaries. Any movies you think of that you could talk about? Star Wars? I mean, someone's had to see how to make Star Wars documentary. Yeah, it's quite a bunch. You see a couple heads bobbing. Well, help me out, Justin. You saw the Star Wars documentary. What are the types of things they talk about when they're walking through, hey, this is how we made the movie?
I guess taking what was in a designer's head and actually fleshing it out, like first on paper and art or whatever, then bringing it to computer generation or whatever. They use little character models, and then how to film it and put it in space, I guess.
I mean, those are sort of the basic implementation steps. There was a conception of something, and that conception went from the mind of the creator onto the paper. You know, it didn't go immediately. They didn't go, hey guys, grab your camera. Let's run out to the back. There was some planning and thought involved. And again, the cinema we discussed is sort of a linear medium that's just you're gonna express the story in a couple hours. So what I did was take that to paper. I said, here's a narrative background, which is all this component here. Right? And then I said, there's gonna be special game mechanics. And I subsequently I went down to a place, and you may, those of you with internet connection right now, may want to go to NW Vault. I'll show you the URL so you can look at it while we're kind of talking through this. NWVault.ign.com. You can see that up there. NWVault.ign.com. Go to that site and then look down the left side into the Neverwinter Nights 2 files and just browse through some of the files while I'm talking through this and then read some of the descriptions. Because what I did was I had some conceptions about how the mechanics should work. And one of the game mechanics that we do in the world, when you start off with Neverwinter Nights, when you die, if you die in the course of it, you will automatically, the default setting is that you automatically respawn the exact location that you die. Now that varies with my conception of what a death mechanic should involve. So when you think about Fairy Queen Online, I've got some built-in death mechanics that I'll show you that I've carried over from this space and in Neverwinter Nights 2. What do you think would, you know, we're not going to necessarily implement this, but I want to talk to you about it. If on a death in the Fairy Queen Online, what would you think would happen to someone?
Can we say go back to last save, since there really is no...
Or a checkpoint or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, I mean, something like that.
Say whatever you want.
That's what I would
That seems like it'd make sense in the type of game you're making.
Right. I was thinking like Garden of Dogs, if you wanted to get really into that. Like just have them like respawn there and then they go out the one gate and...
That would work for the story mechanics.
Like the gate just warps them back to the entrance of the area that they were at.
So that would take them back to the last checkpoint, kind of?
Yeah.
Well,
like
I'm gonna
like your
in
entrances
area.
To your different areas would be like checkpoints.
Yeah, yeah.
So whenever
yeah.
you die in the Garden of Adonis, and you come back in the Garden of Adonis, you walk through the gate.
That also give them something to do after they die, kind of just,
yeah.
if you want to explore it.
Right.
Now the game mechanic today is, as it's expressed today, we may have a vote and say let's have someone build the Garden of Adonis death area, and that's where you instance in. After a death, right now you go back to Edmund Spencer's study in the library, so that if there's not much to kill you in the world right now, but if you go fight a boar, you go fight the classic
the other
boar,
day.
And you die in the process, you're going to be teleported back to have a wee bit of a conversation with Edmund Spencer, and we placed on the table something called the Mutability Cantus, which is very relevant to that changing moment that you just experienced. So there's certain game mechanics, and you are really starting with a clean slate when you build these games. There is no preconceptions. So the reason why I sent you out to, it's IGN.com. The reason why I sent you out to NW Vault is there is a tremendous amount of things that you can bring in there, and I'm going to walk you through some of them. You can just keep going down here. I'm going to flip through this very quickly, and then we're going to get into our discussion.
Explain that, what all these... this prose is.
Oh, you want me to actually go back to the name?
Well, just to mention to them, because this is something you did to enrich it.
Yes.
So, when Matt made this game, he not only did all the coding and set up the world, but for each realm and each aspect of the world, he wrote the background, so that if you download his module, then you'd also be curious to download this sort of documentation. So he wrote a documentation manual side by side with his Mithrandel world. That's something we haven't done, but we could do.
Right. And something we thought about for this semester is to take, and I'll show you how I did each area. And I want to show you how, when we finalize this discussion, I want to show you how we organize the areas in the context of Neverwinter Nights, and then it had an associated prose with it and a description of the area for the players. But this is just like any other basic game. How do you get started in the world? Some of the features I brought into this world was a relic. That second book there was a relic where many of you played a game, and you can see this with Lotro. There's a bind point. I think in World of Warcraft they had, a Hearthstone?
Hearthstone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what was Final Fantasy have something?
Home point.
It was a crystal.
It was a crystal that you had
glowing
to click on.
Blue crystal.
So there's a theme here is that what you don't want to have people do is get 17 maps over, and they have to turn in a quest and then do what? maybe walk all the way back. So I made some rules around this, and these are decisions that you guys can think about as we implement this in the game. I said, all right, up to 3 charges every 8 hours. So every 8 hours, which is real time 8 hours, I'm sorry, game time 8 hours, you could click this and go back to your home point. And I'll tell you some interesting things I found. I was actually hacked. My server was hacked by people in-game. And what happened was I had to make some decisions about the types of controls you can put on a Neverwinter Nights module. So one of the things that you make a decision about when you're developing Fairy Queen Online, you guys would have to think about, would you want people who have their characters stored locally on their machine in Neverwinter Nights? It's very important. If you play Neverwinter Nights a little bit, there's 2 different ways to play it. You can attach to a network-connected hosted game, or you can play locally. Would you want someone who has created a local character to then put it, it's called a local vault, put their local character into your server? Or would you rather maintain control of the types of characters, the range of characters, in the environment? I made a decision here. It says Mithrandale Online RPG, PW Action. That's a classification of the game when you advertise it out for network play. It's persistent world, action orientation. PvP full, that means that you can actually engage in combat while you're in an online space together.
Can you highlight what you're reading?
I'm sorry, this thing at the top.
Oh, okay.
Right here. Draw your attention to this. So it's PW Action, PvP full. This is a decision. Do you want PvP, involuntary PvP potentially? You can have 2 groups of 6 people come into your realm and they start attacking each other. And then legal local characters. There are some, when you start up a Neverwinter Nights server, there are some constraints that your server may only allow character levels 1 through 5. You don't want level 40 epic players. So these decisions that you're making, whether you know you're making them or not, and I can tell you, I'm going to tell you how I made an unconscious decision and got aware really fast of what this means when you're hosting your own Neverwinter Nights environment, which we are at Vanderbilt, by the way. Those legal local characters, I didn't have that flag set on the server tool. I had a guy come in, and every object in Neverwinter Nights has, let me see if I still have Lilac Soul up. This is a script generator. This is called Lilac Soul. It's out there on NW Vault. And you may want to hit the lights for me. Who's on the light control? Just dim it out to, what, scene 5?
Is that what?
I think it's scene 5. We can just flip through the scenes on the lighting until you get to...
Where's the lighting?
No, room control.
There it is. We're on scene 5.
And then just flip until we get something comfortable where we can read that. It's a little bit better.
That's opposite.
No, keep going. That's like very bright. It's like, let's brighten this up.
That didn't show anything.
Power bleached out entirely. Come on, Lee. You're not rolling very well. You're not critically hitting here.
It's taking 20.
There you go. Yeah. Let's work with that. So here's Lilac Soul. This is a script generator. One of the things when you deal with Neverwinter Nights, every object that you touch in the environment has something associated with it. So if there's this pen, there's a physical object substantiated in the world. If you touch it, if you click on it, you grab it, there's an event, it's called an event trigger associated. This is a level of detail you have to operate at to be able to breathe life into the creation, behavioral life into the creation. So if you click on something, there's a series of things with Lilac Soul. This will generate the scripts. This is a normal script, and what they ask you, if they're going to help you here, is saying, where's... Goodness gracious, man. They're going to say, where's the script call from? It's hard, a little hard to read there, but when a PC enters an area, so entering an area can trigger a behavior. When you exit an area, think about the game mechanics, how this would help you carry the narrative forward. Where is a situation in Fairy Queen Online that you would want to have something happen when you enter an area?
Chase.
What chase? Speak
up.
Like the chase, like between like the hunter Florimel or the giant.
The Knight of Names.
All the kind of, yeah, chasing the spirit.
You could also do when you enter Castle Feature and
what would you do there, Derek?
The Mask of Cupid come through.
Of what?
The fire around the
mask of Cupid.
Mm-hmm. The fire around the mask.
Isn't the mask inside the castle?
It is.
Yeah.
So when you entered it,
right.
that's what Derek said.
Mm-hmm.
So are those? So entering an area would be important to have the ability to do something, make something appear, make something disappear, apply a special effect. So what you end up doing is to do the behavioral modifications. What we're asking you guys to do is design areas and NPCs, which is fairly get you this this nice tourism moment where you can say, here's what we've done, we've stitched out and fleshed out an area. But to add behavior and flesh out the action, you have to be able to do programming. Now, Lilac Soul is the easiest way to do programming for someone and affiliate it with an event, whether it's in the context of conversation or the object itself. Then it requires another level of sophistication we can't get into in the class, but for those of you who have interest and disposition, you can use this tool to get there. But I think it's important for you to consider every single tiny little motion that you do in a game has to be purposeful in some respect, because it'll have a series of actions. So what about Britomart when she encounters a couple guys? Anything around Britomart you may want to have when you enter an area near Britomart? Well, I'll let that one linger there while you think about it.
I don't understand the question.
Okay, Britomart is one of our key characters, right? What happens if you're trying to make an instance of Britomart in the world? You have to control over time how you encounter it. You're going to do this by something called area triggers. So you'll cross a border, and then that'll create a cascade effect that says, okay, when a player enters this space, and in this place is the jousting plane. We called it the jousting plane. Jay has it down there. He's pointing to it. When you cross a certain point in the jousting plane, you may want to have Britomart, Arthur, and Guion appear and have some action around that, and there may be particular dialogue to that moment. So just have to be thinking about at a certain point, at a certain time when you cross an area, you may want someone to appear. These are the ways you do it. When a PC opens a door, when a PC closes a door, when a PC clicks on something. So I click that and say, okay, what the Lilac Soul developer has done is they've asked you a series of questions. And they said, all right, so now I know that I'm going to do a normal script, that something's going to happen when a PC clicks on something. The PC is a player character. Do you want to make it so that the script will run under only certain conditions? For example, let's say yes. Let's say, what are those conditions? Only once per the player character. That means this is a one-time event for this character in the context of this game. Only once in the entire game, or some other restrictions. It could be... These are, you can see how this is infinite combinations. It could be that only a certain class is able to engage in this activity, right? So I'm just showing you the infinite possibilities. They could have a message sent to the PC, the player character, that's just for them. They could have a group message triggered. You can start to see that if you let yourself jump right into the coding of this activity without doing what Justin was saying, which is the movie designers go from their conception to paper. This is why it can get so complex. And then what do you want to do when this happens? Give them some gold, for example. And we'll just, 60 gold. And then this is the script. I don't know if you can see that very well. That's the script that would actually be generated, or you would have to know how to write to have a monk, on clicking it, get a piece of gold on that object. So in this case, if there were a little item on the table and a monk character came up and clicked it, the behavior would be to give that monk, only a monk, because if a bard or a fighter or some other class in the system clicked it, the monk would get 60 gold. No one else would. And you would have to understand what all those if statements mean, what the object was, and how these things are worded. Yeah, Dan.
How How did you link this to, how does it know which object you're talking about?
As you're talking about a player character, which is get-clicking object. So I'm not going to go into the computer science of it, but that you're seeing the place there where it says object OPC equals get-clicking object.
Oh, I understand that. I just don't know which object it's calling the method.
It's whatever was clicked. So if it was the cup on the table and you click this cup, that's the event on click. On click would be the name of the event that contained that script.
What I'm asking is, how does it know it's that cup and not this bottle?
Because you inside the containers of the object, you associate a script with that event on that object.
Okay.
The whole point is not to teach you how to do this, right? That's not the point of what I'm trying to do, because if we did that, we would spend 6 to 12 hours just to get you to the basic level. The point is to demonstrate the complexity involved in execution. But the more important point is that to avoid errors in execution, the most important thing we can do is have a good design. So I had to know that I was going to constrain my relic to be only clicked 3 times, and that there was a certain waypoint. Waypoints are very important in Neverwinter Nights design. They tell us a lot, and they're markers for particular locations on maps, where you instance items. There's a waypoint that's a return waypoint, and there's a waypoint on death if we go into Spencer, let me see if I can get to Spencer's study real quick. I can show you the death waypoint once Spencer's study pops up. So you see these right here, these yellow markers? That's a waypoint. That is, I'll explain that one maybe a little bit later, but you see WP death? So I'm clicking on the waypoint here. It's a little hard to see up on that display, but this is Spencer's study. You can see the book strewn about. That's where Spencer actually respawns and generates. But when you die, this is the very spot you're going to drop into. Notice that this object has properties. And the name of this waypoint, which is how you reference it programmatically, is this tag. Waypoint WP stands for waypoint underscore death. And then all of the logic drives back to that waypoint. So I had to make a lot of design decisions before I decided to go through the details of actually doing that implementation. Now, who's ready to do some coding in Neverwinter Nights C language? Anybody?
I can do it.
Band's ready to roll? Yeah, we'll talk and see what some things you might want to do. So I made a couple decisions. I said, you know what? I want an arena in here where people can go in and just fight creatures randomly, level up, do what they want. So there's an arena that you can teleport yourself into through various mechanisms and fight these type of creatures based upon level. Then there's a PvP-specific area that's open into PvP called Tyler Durden's Fight Club. Those of you might know that. So we made Fight Clubs a place you can get into through from the main city. And then we have a place where you can actually safely go up and level up. It's this enchanted grove where you could fight, practice, and target dummies. And every time you made a successful hit on a target dummy, you would accrue XP up to level 3. So we gave them a mechanism to learn how to do the game in a safe space. This is an important design decision if you think you have people who are new to Neverwinter Nights. You have to give them a safe area. This is the thought I had. A safe area in which they can explore the game mechanics. So after I got some of the, here's the basic framework, here's some things that I want to include to help gameplay, I went in and did a summary of, here's the major areas. I said, okay, here's the island, here's the continent, and I just started to describe what some of the various areas would be at a high level. So these are really major regions and sub-areas and things that you might find in there. I'll make sure I put the link to this manual on the blog directly after class today. And I said, here's some of the features I want to build into the game. I said, I want random encounters. Who knows what a random encounter is?
Pokemon.
Yeah. One of my D&D guys. Random encounters, Lee, Derek, you guys want to jump in? What's a random encounter?
Random encounter it's just like you're wandering through the woods and happen upon.
I like adventures better. With the monster and the enemies all already in position around, moving around, so you, like, navigate around them if you want to avoid battles rather than
Would you want random encounters inside a Fairy Queen?
So, which one are we talking about random encounters? Like, one where a monster jumps out on you and you're forced into engagement, or one where monsters are just there and they spawn randomly?
That's not a... I wouldn't view that as a random encounter.
Random encounter is when, like, the glass breaks on the screen and you get to battle.
Gotcha.
I think it's what Lee says, because remember, we're in the world of Dungeons & Dragons rules when we're in the context of Neverwinter Nights. Random encounter meant something particular to that game system, that structure. And you could be wandering through an area. Let's say we're going to still use the jousting plane in Fairy Queen Online. What types of random encounters, like walking down in the streets of Nashville, you're going to have random, what would be apparent random encounters? Sam?
Aren't there random encounters in LOTRO, though, like when the barrow... Well, it's like pop out of the ground when you're like.
I think LOTRO, to answer the question and Colin's and Justin's observation, Jay, you may disagree with this. I'm not sure. I think it's kind of triggered. It's area sensitive. They tend to respawn a lot in those LOTRO areas. When you say. That, you know, if you go to the... Let's take Barrow Downs.
You think there's no truly random wandering whites in Barrow Downs?
I'm not sure about that, but I would say my perception so far is not. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, there's definitely triggered ones.
Triggered ones.
You know, because there's a particular area when you go for a quest, and when you walk into it, they come rising out of their grave. But, you know...
My question was, like, is it a random encounters ones that are made... No logic, or like no consistent logic.
Is a consistent logic. Let me give you an explanation from the sort of the emergent perspective of this. You would a dungeon master in a D&D game. There's a dungeon master, and you're walking through the joust. Imagine that you're walking through the jousting plane. If we were playing Dungeons and Dragons, and this was our D&D module, because this is our D&D module. It's just expressed through the medium of Neverwinter Nights. So we're creating the D&D module for Fairy Queen. We're walking through the jousting plane, and you know the typical inhabitants is this Victorian era population, you know, a la fantasy. And so you're walking through that jousting plane, and the dungeon master has a probabilities table or a conception that some percentage of the time, every so often, in the game mechanics, Lee, what's it? Is it turn based? How long is a turn?
A turn is 6 seconds, but a turn is once everybody does their action, then 6 seconds is back.
Okay,
in the battle.
And that's a very important mechanic for Neverwinter Nights. Let me tell you about Neverwinter Nights mechanic. Now, let's see if I can get it to it. I may not be able to get quickly to an area of properties. But if you look at some of these properties, and I can't find it right now. There we go. I got to get actually into the area. There is a property there called On Heartbeat. Heartbeat is a turn every 6 seconds, so it'll fire an event. And on that, there's an On Heartbeat script. You see this here? Evan, it's going to be hard for you to see because it's over on the right side of the screen. I have an On Heartbeat script. And it, every heartbeat, it runs spawn sample HB. That's a random encounter. I don't have it programmed that way in Fairy Queen Online, but I've got the mechanics there on every area if we wanted to put it in. That a certain probability you roll and then someone would appear. So on the jousting plane, you have some design thoughts that you've got to put into. I made a decision, random encounters. Do you guys want it, random encounters? I'm sorry, I'm running really low on time here, so I got to speed this up. A lot of things I wanted to do was NPC-driven quests, but MMO-style POIs, and this is this trigger idea. So one of the things you'll see in, go back to the previous Edmund Spencer study, let me get back to my computer, cooperate. This is not Edmund Spencer, is it? This is actually a waypoint with this code. There's a code here. This is actually some programming that tells me how to spawn Edmund Spencer the way I want. And it'll spawn this Edmund Spencer object. It's very complex, but I can spawn Edmund Spencer with a certain degree of frequency. Matter of fact, I can despawn him. So I made a decision to have those, what Dan mentioned earlier, what Sam alluded to is that there's certain points, like a waypoint on a map, that if you go to, that if you get those orcs, goblins, or Red Cross Knight will be standing there, and at a certain point he will despawn. And if he's killed after a certain interval, they'll respawn. So we put a lot into this, and then what I wanted to start getting into, we'll start making the conversation back to you guys discussing some of the issues at hand. I started off with just these areas, and I had them numbered. So each one of these areas, the briefing room in this case, 001 was map 001. That was an area. And so I had all of these areas that were under development. And then what I did here is I created a map. That's what I get up to. And each one of these hexagons corresponded with some spatial reference. So what you would see, for example, and we'll start porting this back over Neverwinter Nights, each one of these areas over in the left side that I'm clicking on right here, each one of these areas were, remember, from my conception to the written discussion about them to how I actually implemented them in Neverwinter Nights, each one of these areas had a particular meaning to me spatially. And it's very important when you do this spatially, because when you start programming exits and entries in between maps, you know, 101, if I do 1010, which is this hex here, and I wanted people to go south, you have to have two different components on each side of the map that tie together. Right? And you have to know that this goes to here. You don't want someone running south unless this is your intent, and suddenly they find themselves back up in 1409, right? You want to have that illusion of physical continuity when you're moving your story forward. Now, when we do, we've talked about having the flashback. Do you want to tell them about your conception of Merlin's Cave and the potentiality for a flashback?
Well, definitely so. If someone chooses, some team chooses to make Merlin's Cave, we'll need to figure out how we're going to go there, because we end Canto 1, as you remember. Where do we end Canto 1? That's interesting. I would have said we ended in Castle Joyous.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, though. Your memory may be better than mine.
That's right after the battle.
I think Canto 1 ends, but do they walk out the door? And her bright arms of iron. They took their steeds and forth upon their journey went. So basically, they're leaving Castle Joyous at the end of Canto 1. And so Canto 2 is a flashback, first to her father's house and then to the cave. So actually, you know, if we really wanted to do Canto 2, we'd have to read it, which we're not going to do, and go. But if we wanted just to get them to the cave, which appears in Canto 3 and which you have read, how are you going to get there from, see this spot right there? That's Castle Joyous on the map. So they're going to get on their steeds to ride off. How are you going to get them into Merlin's Cave?
You create the space and create a waypoint and call them to that space,
right,
separate from the continuity of the environment that you created.
Yeah, but narratively, that's absolutely right. You see, you've pointed out that there's two dimensions here. There's a game design dimension, you know, the placing of a waypoint and transporting, but there's also got to be a narrative connection. There has to be some narrative link to the cave. Dan, were you going to make a different kind of comment?
Oh, I was going to make out once per player, trigger once leaving Castle Joyous, go to Merlin's Cave. And then,
or, I mean, would you have a fork there?
No, you'd be...
you'd have to go to Merlin's Cave. You'd say that you have to go.
Once you leave Castle Joyous, you're in Merlin's Cave. And then once you leave Merlin's Cave, you're outside of Castle Joyous again.
Right. Are we able to have a bit of text come up as we're... So you'd have to write a little narrative text. Wounded Britomart remembers
But you
the time she was winter.
It would be so much fun if we could do vocals.
No.
Yeah,
but
why?
Why? We did a visual representation. Is there any way we could, like,
no audio
take a cutscene and then just zoom in on Britomart's face and, like, go into her eyes and then you're suddenly in the... That'd be freaking cool.
That would be brilliant, but we're not going to have cutscenes because you'd have to then download a separate module before you could play the game. Is that correct?
In this case, it's extraordinarily complex to make a cutscene. You can have a cutscene without a download using the existing. They're extraordinarily complex to make. But if someone would like to try it, there's major tutorials on how to get to a cutscene. And the point about all these, the dreaming part, is that people can, you know, Evan's first thing was, let's do vocals. You can do vocals. And it's extraordinarily complicated. And then it gets into the issue of accessibility that Professor Clayton mentions. You have to then make a custom package for people to download in addition to your base module. And packaging these things up and distributing them to people with various levels of technical understanding is problematic, as we've experienced here. That's part of the journey, is this is understanding the complexity of producing
these things. Are saying that if somebody wanted to make a cutscene,
they absolutely could.
They could.
Nothing
so a team
them.
Can do that if they so choose.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And they can do it without any further modification.
Okay, good to know.
So let me conclude this, because I want to get you guys into the discussion around how we think the thing should be spatially oriented, and then get Derek up on the smart board to start taking some notes there. The last couple of points I want to make here from Mithrandale.
Take a look at this.
Is take a look at this kind of Cartesian map. I mapped it into the campaign cartographer kind of colorful map and said, here's how I want people to go. So This Iderus abandoned docks, if you go south from there, you go into Cherub's Abbey dockside, and then the village proper. If you go to the east, you go to these three instances of this, I can barely pronounce this, Magloobliet Woods, and you have various areas that you go. So you can see north, south, east, west, but that's not entirely consistent with the hexagonal quadrant system, but it gives you a sense of how you need to start conceiving of, you know, where's Castle Boussorain, if you have this chart, relative to something else. How do you lay things out, and how you traverse your narrative space is going to be very important as to how effective the understanding is of the Fairy Queen. That's what we were talking about when we said spatio-temporal understanding of the cantos in question. So we'll go back and revisit that. How do you want it to unfold over time? And space, spatio-temporal, right? How do you have these unfold over space and time? A tremendous amount of thought process and design work has to go into this to be effective. And so you can see, and the other thing is, this is a 73-page document, guys. So you understand that. Look at some of the things that we're able to do, and this is the amount. This is for the technicians who want to play with this. This whole capability right here. I've got all this. How you do. Scripting conventions. I'm going to see if there's some code in here. That's some of the code. That's a store vendor system that's been developed and integrated from Neverwinter Vault. And just look at some of the complexities involved in really fleshing out the world. That was a year in the making. So think about those complexities. I'll make sure you have this online so you can see it and play with it a little bit. A lot of the underlying scripts, the base module, is based upon these scripts being integrated, so you have access to those. So, with that being said,
Derek, you're on.
You're on, Derek.
So, right here is a map of England, basically.
And Derek, you're going to have to be cognizant of the people back here.
That's right. That's a map of England. Pardon me?
I'm showing him that it finally came up.
Oh, good. So you got it. Yeah. Excellent. A map of England that we traced onto the smart board. And we had two graduate students who were experts in the Renaissance period researching the geography of fairyland. And they came up with the conclusion that nothing definitive is known about the geography of fairyland. Mm-hmm. That Spencer, that it's roughly mapped over England, but it's not England because England appears in the fairyland. So it's a kind of odd. But it also said that they also determined that Britomart came up from the south in Wales, and Red Cross Knight and Guyon. No, wait, it was Arthur and Guyon. Arthur and Guyon came down from this northwest, and they met right here, according to what we decided. But we got to make these choices because there are no scholarly maps of the action of the Fairy Queen. So in one thing that resulted from last class's decision is, look, there we go. So you see Wales on that map there that he's bringing up to us. So Britomart is journeying up from sort of the, you know, imagine the E in Wales, up into the east, and Arthur and Guyon are journeying down from the, you know, over there by to the left of Liverpool, say, and they encounter. And we decided that they'd meet about right there, on this map, and have their encounter, and then after their encounter, they would go off to the northeast. How many people have been in Fairy Queen Online now? Okay. So you've been on that jousting. Those of you that have been on that jousting, and you run up to the northeast, and you find a waypoint where that will jump you then into the woods. Now this map, in my view, if this is England, this map should be compressed into a tiny little pixel of England. You know, the amount of space here is spread out for our class's visual use, not for a map that would appear in game, because this would be grossly distorted in terms of distances. So it jumps from there to the woods. And if you're in, you know, it'd be great if we could. Is somebody in Fairy Queen Online right now?
Yeah. No?
Okay. It would be. You all should go in and take a look at it. And in there, there is a boar that will kill you.
Yes.
What?
You got killed.
It did happen.
Yes, it did.
I live in Edmonton for stuff.
And grind up. Or you can get a higher level character from the get-go and kill the boar.
You get a higher level character from the get-go.
Because if you scroll down through the create a new character, I mean the use one of their pre-made characters. There can be, you know, level 18 characters, and 18 owns those boars. There's the forester's cabins right in there, but nothing happens at it. It's just there for future elaboration. And there's a path through it, beset by boars, and it emerges onto a field right there. And that field is where Britomart encounters what?
Six knights.
And those six knights have been made, but we haven't put any triggers in to have them come out and fight each other. That's something that our development team needs to do. It's certainly not something we want planned to do. This, you know, that's kind of boring technical work, mm-hmm. as opposed to creative work. We want you all doing creative work, actually making characters, designing spaces, not coding encounters. And then someone got really inspired and built a farm over here to the left that doesn't exist in the Fairy Queen that I know of.
But there's lots of wolves there.
But there's, yeah, a lot of wolves that'll get you. And, you
it's
know,
well done, too.
It's very nicely very done. And so, you know, it's true that even though Spencer doesn't mention any farms in Book 3, you'd suspect there'd be a farm.
Particularly near a castle.
Right near a castle, exactly, to supply food. So there's just an extra farm there, and then you go into the castle, and there is a gigantic castle with the Queen's receiving hall with lots of NPCs in it, the Britomart's bedroom with Britomart in there.
Dining room, library, main floor, upstairs.
And Britomart's bedroom, all populated with NPCs. So that was a really
Malacastus
big.
Bedroom.
Is it Britomart's or Malacastus?
It's called Britomart's.
It should be Britomart's.
That's where they have the Malacastus
that's where they have
encounter.
The
that's where they have the encounter, exactly. So the question is, let's now, using Derek to draw on our map, figure out where we want B Busserin to be, Castle Busserin, because you are going to not necessarily. How are we going to determine where you journey from here to get to Castle Busserin? How are you going to make that decision?
Right now, the way we start off, you start off in our conference room here, you go through that door, and you're in the jousting plane. That's how people enter the game space. The magic circle is crossed.
So what's our evidence for where to put it?
The text somewhere.
Yeah, right. So where would you start looking? Which is Canto 11 is outside of Castle Busserin. And if you get to Canto 11, you've got Brennemark Chaseth Oliphant as your start. So the first thing you're going to want to do is locate a space.
Why don't you insert, and you don't have to use this map because we can cut and paste that to a different page if we need to. Insert another page. And you can start writing your notes and scrawling from there. If you go in front of the pages, just get rid of the spacing, just do another page.
So, go to Kennel 11. And just start reading stanzas 1, 2, 3. First thing, right away, Fair Britomart's there in stanza 2.
He says in stanza 20, they march not past the mountains of the Shah. Is that...
Say that. I can't actually hear you over there.
There's in stanza 20, after Britomart persuades Scudamore to come with her.
Uh-huh.
Thus she at length persuaded him to rise, and with her went, she would do success, will him befall upon his enterprise. His arms which she doth disprofess, so forth they both, you fair, make their progress, and march not past the mountains of Ashad till they arrived, whereas the purpose they did plot.
So not, march not past the mountains of Ashad.
I think that just means that they didn't get very far from each other.
Right. Mutanance, what would that mean? Does anybody have a note on mutanance?
It says distance.
Distance of a shot. What kind of shot?
Arrow shot.
So you're going to have, we now know that Britomart comes on Scudamore. First, Britomart sees giants chasing sees Oliphant chasing a boy, a young man. And what does she do back in stanza 3 and 4? Three, four, five.
She starts chasing the giant as well, and then the giant backs off.
The giant runs away. Yeah. He soon rescind his former suit, and from them fled apace. I'm in stanza 5. They after both, and boldly bat in base, and each did strive the other to outgo. But he them both outran a wondrous space, for he was long and swift as any roe, and now made better speed to escape his feared foe. And so if somebody makes a giant, we'd have Britomart enter an area, or you enter an area, and see a giant. You would engage the giant. Britomart would come along. The giant would flee away. I mean, you could make a decision on whether you engage the giant whether you want to fight the giant. I would think that'd be a pretty good opportunity for you to be in there rescuing, and the giant be just about to kill you when Britomart arrives, or, you know,
the people who do Castle Boucherate and the areas surrounding it get to make
those kinds of decisions. You could engage that giant or whether you just watch that giant run away. But then you'd chase that giant. So, right, chase his giants away, and write landscape question mark. You're going to chase on another line, just indent it so that we can...
It says that he went into a forest.
That's what, okay. So, which stanza?
I'm on the...
Oh, you're on the thing that...
It's right after the one you just read.
Right,
after
6, then.
Yeah.
So is there a Castle Boucherate forest area that we need to...
Yeah. Right, okay, so landscape, forest. So you'd want to land on a plane, chase him into a forest. He'd run into a forest. You follow into a forest.
Britomart follows... the squire, I think, through the forest for a while, and then she finds a fountain.
Fountain?
Where she finds Scudamore.
Fountain?
Lying by the fountain.
And so what's a fountain?
Probably like a spring or just a pool of water.
Right, so it's not actually going to be
a
sculptural thing with waters squirted out. So we could write areas down there about, good for you. Did you already have all that, or are you writing it as we...
Yes and yes.
Yes and yes. Okay. A field, now Boucherain for... Boucherain... fountain. I mean...
A whole other area?
In the forest.
It's inside the forest.
Okay. Well, what we need to do now, guys, and this is the important part, because we're rapidly diminishing our time.
Yeah, tell me what...
What we need to do is a couple things. We need to get a sense of, and this is where we're going to have to continue, we will continue this discussion into next class. Some of you can stay after class, help me organize this a little bit better. But we've got to get you assigned to these areas and to these NPCs.
That's right.
And then, but in the predecessor, that we can start talking about it now with whatever little time you have left after we do the assignments. We've got to understand where Castle Boucherain is. And do me a favor, Derek, go back to the previous map. Can we come to some agreement? And Jay started off here, is how you'd like us to, in a design decision to be treated the Fairy Queen, is there a reference, spatiotemporal reference, to where Castle Boucherain is relative to what we've instantiated in the universe here today? Where would Castle Boucherain be? Does anybody have an opinion?
You know, the fact is, we can't determine that because... we haven't read some intervening stanzas, of which she's journeyed a lot. So we get to make just an arbitrary jump. And you're going to come out of Castle Joyous, and you could have two choices at that moment, to Merlin's Cave or directly to the field. Yes.
We assume, this forest extends up higher. Out of Castle
Gorse
this way?
Yeah, that would be one thing. You had another idea?
Well, are they exiting the front of the castle, or...?
I think that castle only has one gate, currently.
Yeah, it does, and it will.
Okay. So, yeah, that would make sense. Just continuing on.
So, actually, you could have a path going... Ooh, I didn't know
where
that
would...
Where
is that? Into the farm? Where it
here,
is?
Give me...
If you need Derek to draw, let him...
No, I can... Yeah. Draw a path from the front to the northwest, like that, not too far, and then draw another path to the southeast.
From the castle.
From the castle. And that, the one down to the right, could lead to Merlin's Cave. Who is interested in doing Merlin's Cave? Do we have anybody, group that's been interested in making Merlin's Cave?
We're about to start the bidding process and get ready. A couple people are ready to roll.
Okay.
So, write Merlin's Cave on there.
That's a nice cave, though.
That's
like that.
Lovely
cave. It's a lovely cave. And It is true that Merlin is associated with seashores and the like. And so if we want to do further, one thing I would suggest is doing some Googling on Merlin's Cave and finding where in England Merlin's Cave would be in the Arthurian myths, not just in Spenser. And so, you know, we can kind of bring extra knowledge, you know, extra textual knowledge to it because there is no definitive map of the Fairy Queen. So if you can find on Google that Merlin's Cave is in Scotland, that could be a heck of a big jump.
You know? So we've got two good, at least we know the sequencing, we know that we're going to tie it off of Castle Joyous. Anybody have any objections to that?
Dan
has an objection?
I thought that it was, with it being a linear narrative, you went to Merlin's Cave in a reflection, and then you got to hit, then you continued in physical reality to go somewhere.
Merlin's Cave is a flashback.
Right.
And so, if you're going to force the player to follow the see, there's different kinds of linearity, and this is something for us to talk about. Is the linearity of the order of the cantos, or is it the linearity of the hypothetical narrative time? The hypothetical narrative time is she emerges from Castle Joyous in her adult life. She goes on further quests off to the northeast. The canto linearity would lead you into a flashback.
Right.
So.
And I think that then we could either link the, I guess when you come out of the classroom, you would go to Merlin's Cave.
Oh yeah, you could offer a choice out of the, I mean, that would require some design reworking, but you could offer a door. That's not a bad idea, in fact.
And never winter nights, the beauty of it is, a door can lead anywhere.
You could offer a door, not only into the Fairy Queen land, but into this Merlin's Cave and Realm of Memory. That could be pretty cool.
Can you link area transitions to a conversation?
Yes, it can. They can trigger. It's an event trigger that can teleport you somewhere. Right. There's a teleport function.
Just theoretically, when the player leaves Castle Joyous, you could possibly have Spenser show up and say something and sort of let the player choose if they want to see the flashback.
Absolutely, that's possible.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
So think about that. This is the kind of creative design discussion that you all are entitled to have. We are going to follow what you decide to the extent we're technologically capable of doing. And so, you know, those are some options. Do you want to give Merlin's Cave straight out of Spenser's study just as a different place to enter into the Fairy Queen, which would be like enter? And you see, the thing is, there is a logic to that. Merlin's Cave is chronologically earlier than anything that happens.
And you can exit out of Merlin's Cave onto the Jousting.
Indeed. Yeah. I saw a hand over here.
Yeah, I was
wondering.
We have
4 minutes at last.
Or commenting that we don't actually have to decide it definitively
today.
At any point, because you can link
I'm at a 5-minute mark, and I got to be the tyrannical time.
So we're going to move to that.
Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to explain the next motions of our course. Right now, we're going to assign people to things. We've got to do it. This is our time to do it, the last 5 minutes of class. We're going to continue this discussion on Thursday. We've got a blog topic that you and I are going to discuss for Thursday. One more blog topic to deal with. It's going to be related to the design. I haven't decided what that'll be, but it'll be something that carries forward your design. I'm not going to spend time lecturing on Thursday. What I'm going to do is I'm going to quiz you on the reading.
Is this Thursday before Thanksgiving?
Yes, it's Thursday coming up.
Okay. Was anyone planning to violate every possible rule of Vanderbilt and completely destroy your entire image as a student by leaving early for Thanksgiving and missing Thursday class?
I don't think so.
I know none of these students would do that.
Friday.
I didn't ask about Friday.
Friday.
That's not my business.
Guys, we are rapidly out of time.
Okay, we got to be out of time. So I want people here on Thursday.
Be here on Thursday. You'll miss a quiz if you're not. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Okay, so we need to go ahead and start the assignment.
We got to get some assignments here. Move.
These are areas. I'm going to start organizing the areas under which the canto we think they're relevant to. We've got these three areas and these three areas that we discussed. And then we also have NPC assignments. So let's I know some people. Who wants Castle Boussoirain? The interior of the castle. Raise your hands up. Who we got? Dan says he wants it. Colin says he wants it.
What do y'all want?
Gladiator battle.
I agree.
What?
Oh, I thought you meant to settle
No,
who wants? You guys want Castle Boussoirain?
We're torn between that and the Woodland's Cave.
Okay, let's do it this way. Sweet. I'm going to make it easier on everybody. I know those two combined. What's your combined levels? Team Jim and Kyle.
90-something.
They're about 92 on their combined levels. Does anybody beat 92 in the combined Lotro levels?
I'm level 95.
I'm level 95.
You're way past it. You're teleported into the future, Colin. I think they choose. This has always been our conflict resolution mechanism on this. What do you guys want as the highest combined Lotro team?
Think about it for a second. Who's the second highest?
There you go.
Who's the second highest while you're thinking? Okay. Wait, let's see.
Professor Klain's going to write this out
for
later.
Yeah,
I think we're in there.
Jump to our teams.
Oh, there we go. That's what we'll do. Good idea.
Jump to our teams.
So okay.
Derek and Lee, what's your level?
I'm a 20. In the teens. So, or about like
20 plus 15 is the best you get then until you tell me. Next, Lynn and Justin.
We don't care what
I'm
we get.
I'm 16.
So.
Yeah, but still tell us so that you're
15.
Okay.
Sam and Max?
I was 18.
Both 18. Plus Sam?
18.
Okay, Colin?
21.
Keep going. Chris?
I'm 17. Okay. Amir? Dan? 21.
14.
Evan and Justin.
14.
16.
Yeah. So you all are vying for a humiliation position?
It would have been far more humiliating to be the only one.
Yeah, okay. So it does look like we got some close ones right in there.
Yeah.
So the next
Holy cow.
The next one is Derek and Lee. What do you guys want?
I don't know. It looks like Collins and Colin and Chris.
Oh, I'm sorry, that guy's 38.
Colin and Chris.
We're gonna do Merlin's Cave.
Merlin's Cave. Team
six.
Six is Merlin's Cave. Where did I go?
And we're also taking Merlin and the NPC.
Makes sense.
Well, that's just downright logical.
Okay. Good.
Okay. Okay.
Our next exciting winner is Team 4.
We'll take Castle Boussoirain.
Inside or out?
You
are not
inside.
That's
outside.
I mean, the outside is just plop it down.
Claim your
right?
NPCs.
It's a prefab.
I guess we'll probably take Boussoirain.
That's probably sensible.
Oh. You better make him really evil.
We keep going.
We gotta keep going.
Keep going here. So next, who's next? Sam and Max.
Sam and Max.
Team three.
So it's we're gonna do the forest and Scudamore.
Forest. And once you got your team assignments, you can blow it out of here. And what did
Scudamore.
You want?
Scudamore. Okay.
Yeah.
Ty, Amir and Dan, and Derek and Lee.
There's no way we can get two internal, and then we do them as we keep them in the area. This is the one I want to do.
What do you want to do?
The hub section of internal Boussoirain being...
They want the tapestry, guys. Can you get
we want the mess in Cupid.
Okay, they want the tapestry.
We have
Cupid,
Venus.
Yeah, we have all the gods.
Okay,
all the gods are in the tapestry.
Derek and Lee, you get
Cupid.
Is Adonis in the tapestry?
Diana.
Yeah.
Diana, Venus. Put them all in
there. Is he in the tapestry, though?
I don't know yet. Let me just focus on what they're
okay. Okay.
Where is the area? You guys got a tapestry, right?
Yes.
I don't. Yeah, tapestry.
No one got Adonis or the field. Okay.
Okay, so but we don't have to do all those areas.
Oh no, I just want to make sure. Dan's lobbying for something I don't think we have up here.
The Mastic Cuban, which is a subsection of the internal capital.
So it's just. It's just a room in which the Mask of Cupid occurs with a statue. Okay? So,
well, but that's up to these guys. They own Boosterang.
I thought they had the backup real Boosterang. We have it.
They own Castle Boosterang.
They have the real Boosterang, but Boosterang is not in the Mask of Cupid.
Okay, so you're creating a whole new area then. Yes?
Well, you walk into this room, you're going to have a... I mean, walking into
Mask
the room...
Mask of Cupid is area inside Boosterang.
The Mask of Cupid is,
yes,
definitely, but... Oh, yeah, the Mask of Cupid and the Venus and Adonis are inside castle.
That's where I was getting to. So
you have to get the Cupid thing from us. We've already made Cupid.
You guys have Cupid. And then we insert the... I think in that room, there's capturing the door into...
And that was Amir and Dan.
And a statue.
We just got to make sure anything we use that goes between the two were consistent.
Oh, you got to read the text.
Can we actually make a tapestry? Yeah, look like a tapestry.
Yeah. No, you have to use a
prayer. We're in Team 7. Team 7.
You click on
Team 2. Yes.
There first.
Okay, Team 2, sorry.
We'll take the Garden of Adonis.
We're masculine.
Team 2, Garden of Adonis. What's NPCs, guys?
You guys don't worry about the
things.
And then which team are you?
Who would be in?
What are you? What's your area?
Garden you guys don't
need to. Who do we have? Aesthetics.
Belphoebe, Venus, and
like if you need any other characters, take
them. Misogyny.
Right, he's taken.
Yeah.
No, not Chris. Just Cupid and Venus.
And then I guess could we put just random.
Yeah, a lot of random
other
stuff.
NPCs, because, I mean, it's going
to
be...
You're not limited to this.
Okay.
Okay, so don't think you're limited. This is just, we want to know you're covering these NPCs. All right, who's the next team that I haven't covered yet? Team 7?
Yeah.
All right, what do you do to get on here?
Does the field include the outside of the castle?
Outside of the castle. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I think that castle would just drop in there. Maybe you can make modifications on it.
Okay, and what about, I mean, is any NPCs in the exterior of the castle? Is it Oliphant? But we got Oliphants out front, right?
Yeah, make Oliphant. Yeah. He'll be actually technically in another field.
We can still bring up, I mean, if we're doing all the work on
you want to do
with Oliphants? That'll be good to make a big old giant.
Yeah.
I mean, there are three fat giants, so you're going to want to customize it.
Guys, thank you.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, I'm going to download one thing.